Welcome back to another weekly episode of The Culture is Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me better on social media as Leo Grand Prince. This is episode 4 of this new podcast about financial literacy geared specifically to the culture and how best we can manage our money, get on the path to financial wealth and generational wealth, building a foundation that we once had but have lost for various reasons over the decades, and how we can position ourselves to be more prosperous, how we can leave an inheritance to our children, and all things a matter of that way. I've been working behind the scenes getting you guys some guests lined up, some subject matter experts. I promised you on the first episode that on matters that I didn't know in depth, but only on a high level, I would bring on some guests to kind of get into some details of some things that when, you know, that we're steering you on the right path with as much congestible and, you know, simplistic information as possible. That way you can make a sound decision that works for your family, because we know that one size fits all is not going to work, especially in matters of investment, whether you're in the stock market, in real estate, in business. People need a diverse selection of information and experiences so that they can best make the decision that's best for their family, because everyone's family makeup is different. So that'll be coming to you actually starting next week. We have our first guest on the next episode, so I'm very excited for that, and I hope you guys are as well. This week, I thought we focus on funds, and by that I mean funds on the stock market. Oftentimes, I get a lot of questions from people in reference to what should they buy. And if you don't know, I don't give specific stock pick information, because I feel like that's more instinctive for everyone. Mostly because I always tell people, the one thing I do tell them is you buy shares in companies that you know. If you don't know oil or biotech, I really don't want you buying those type of things. But you might know consumer brands, and you might know banks, and you might know that if you're a nurse or in the medical field, you might know healthcare. So I would encourage you to buy those. But overall, people sometimes they're like, I don't necessarily have the time to manage the money or, you know, pick individual stocks. And the market has something for that, and they're called funds. They're the most common three are mutual funds, index funds, and ETFs, exchange traded funds. So I'm going to go into each detail of each one and how the mechanism might work for you and your family and your investment strategy and the tangible goals that you've set for you. And hopefully it'll give you an insight of how this might work in your portfolio, even if you want to, even you might not decide that you don't want to add it to your portfolio, but at least you'll have the information there so that you can make the best decision for you. I'm going to start with mutual funds, and mutual funds are a basket of funds, whether it be stocks, bonds, maybe some REITs. REITs stands for, REIT stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. But there are dozens, actually literally hundreds of funds that trade on the stock market, and their makeup is different. It's different on the returns they're trying to gain, the risk that is associated with that fund, because every fund's risk is different. You might have some conservative funds. You might have some aggressive funds. You might have some income-generating funds, some capital appreciation funds, and we'll get into all that. Actually, I think I might produce a podcast for you guys about investment strategy, and we'll get into income-producing capital and all that. But each fund is made up of a basket of funds based off the goal that they're trying to meet. One key point about mutual funds is mutual funds are professionally managed. They're professionally managed by a fund firm, and each fund itself has a portfolio manager. Now, this is important because a managed fund is mostly for people who don't have time either way. It's either they don't have confidence in their own investment acumen, or they just feel as though that an active professional manager probably could pick stocks better than them, and they just want someone to do the work for them, or they just really just don't want to do the work. Not everyone who wants to be a part of the stock market necessarily wants to do what I like to call the day-to-day operational work. They don't want to do the research. They don't want to do, you know, the weekly rebalancing of the portfolio. They don't want to have to keep up with the news and all that. They might just want someone to do the day-to-day stuff, and they just get a quarterly report of this is a position, did we lose, did we gain, and that thing. Okay, this is, as I said before, this is more for passive investors. I'll get into active investors a little bit later, but passive investors are people who just want to hand someone their money and just kind of not wash their hands of it, but kind of just let someone else do the work. I reference it to someone who might be investing in real estate, and you're buying a vacant or a bando, or you might be building it from scratch. You're investing the money, the financial capital, but you don't want to be the laborer. You're not the contractor. You're not the one putting the roof on. You're not putting the plumbing in. You just want to finance it and have someone else produce the finished product. Okay. Now, a good thing about a mutual fund is it's a diverse collection of individual securities. And by securities, you'll hear me say this probably in the future, or you might have heard me say it in previous podcasts. Securities is just another way to say stocks, shares, investments. Those words are very interchangeable. So don't ever think I'm thinking of, I'm talking about something separate. Anytime I say securities, I'm talking about shares. Anytime I say shares, I'm talking about securities. You'll also hear me say equity sometimes. So just to clarify that, these words are very interchangeable. And I want to be able to give you the financial language. I just don't want to give you strategy. I want you guys to be able to speak the talk. So that way, if you do decide to pick something like a mutual fund and your portfolio manager says, you know, security or some other investment language, you'll be able to know exactly what he's talking about. So it's a diverse collection of securities. And this is good because often you'll hear me saying diversify your portfolio. And by that, I mean, don't have all your eggs, literally don't have all your eggs in one basket. And in terms of investments, that means not having all your investments in one sector or in one stock. Let's say you have $5,000 to invest. If you put all $5,000 in Amazon, Facebook, and Tesla, though you're not in one company, and someone would say, oh, I'm diversified because all my money's not in one company, but you're in the same same sector or same industry. All of them are technology companies. Yeah, Tesla makes cars, Amazon does e-commerce, and Facebook does, you know, social networking, but they're all tech companies. If you see analyst reports on those three, they are all tech, and they're all in the same industry, so you're not diversified. You're actually pretty tech-heavy and overweight and exposed to that sector. So if that entire sector has a bad day or a bad quarter, your portfolio probably has had a bad day or a bad quarter because you're overly exposed in that one sector. So a mutual fund, as with other funds, gives you a diverse exposure to that specific, to a broad variety of market exposure. Most mutual funds will have exposure to a variety of different sectors. They might have, you know, some tech in there. They'll have some consumer brand. They might have some international exposure. The goal is to be as broadly exposed as possible to get you the best return. And this will help with that. I recommend that sometimes that people have a mutual fund or some other fund just to be diversified, just to fill that goal of being diversified. Let's say your portfolio is exactly like I said, you got your Amazon, your Tesla, and your Facebook, but you also have a mutual fund that's more broadly spread out. People will use that to say, I'm diversified because, yeah, I got those three, but I also have a good amount of money in this mutual fund to kind of balance that out. And that is, in those type of cases, again, it's case by cases, I would be fine with that because you are balancing it off by being diversified in the fund itself. But in that type of predicament, I would probably say I would want you just maybe 40% in the mutual fund, and then you can put the 60% in, you know, those tech-heavy stocks. One thing that is very specific about a mutual fund is it can only be traded once a day. And that is at the end of the day at 4 p.m. at the and you can buy or sell at whatever price that it closed at that day. So you can't, they cannot be traded multiple times a day like individual stocks or some other funds, which we'll get into later. Mutual funds can only be sold or bought at the end of the day at whatever closing price for the market at 4 p.m. Mind you, another thing is you don't even have to have a brokerage account for mutual funds. Remember, everything runs through the fund firm itself, so they do all the trading for you. But if you were to need to get out of your position or to sell your investment, they would only be able to do it at the end of day that day. So that's a very big point to be made about that, because in a time where the market has a lot of volatility, people want to know when they can get in and out of their trades. With a mutual fund, you can only trade once a day, and it's at the end of the day. There's also a fee charge for mutual funds because the portfolio manager has to get, you know, paid, correct? So typically there's a fee of about 1%. And to simplify it for you, let's say 1%. If you have $10,000 invested, 1% is $100 for $10,000. So you would pay $10,000. I mean, you would pay $100,000 to that portfolio manager and that fund firm for that $10,000 that you had invested. That would be the fee. So a lot of people like that, they think that's a small payment for the money that they have. But if you start upping your investment, let's say it's $10,000 and it's $100 now, eventually, if you have $100,000 invested, that's $1,000. And some people's like, whoa, that's a lot of money to pay for you to manage my money. And sometimes that's not even, you don't even get a return on that money. So if you have a down year or a down investment, the fund manager still has to get paid because they are managing your fund. So if that $100,000 goes down, let's say it's been not too bad to record it, but it loses 5%. Now it's down to $95,000. They're still getting paid $1,000. So that's another way to weigh it. Sometimes the cost benefit is not always fair, or it doesn't always benefit you in the way that you might, the way that you would hope. And the last point to make about a mutual fund is this is what we would consider active management. I know you guys are saying, but I'm not active. You're not active, but the firm itself is active management. So you're being a passive investor, but the firm is acting on your behalf. And this is what is called in the industry active management. Okay. Now we're going to move on to the index funds. Those are the separating details for the mutual funds. Next is the index funds. And the index funds, they adhere to an entirely different strategy. Instead of picking or choosing just the stocks, the portfolio manager thinks, well, I'll perform, you know, the market. Index funds buys all the shares that make up a potential index, a potential index industry. So let's say, for instance, index fund might be, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but index fund might be a spider 500 or S&P 500 that literally gauges or mirrors the entirety of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is a highly tech-heavy index. They hold a lot of their listings are tech companies. So you'll find the likes of your Teslas, your Microns, your Amazons, your Twitters, anything that is tech focused will be listed on the S&P 500. So the index looks to mirror that index and picks those shares to be in that index fund. In the S&P 500, it holds the largest stocks, so there'll be some of the largest companies that you're very well versed in, things you'll hear in the news. And then they have other indexes like the Russell 2000 that holds smaller companies that you probably have never heard of. We're talking about companies that, and people are, I know you'll say that that doesn't sound like a small company to me, but the Russell 2000 generally holds companies that have a market capitalization of 500 million, but no more than 5 billion. And I know with that type of size and scale, you're like, that doesn't sound like a small company. But that's just the technical, that's what the market views as a small caps or a smaller company. So that works out for them. So that's what the index funds are trying to do. They're trying to mirror all of these indexes like the S&P 500, like the Russell 2000, to replicate the entire return of the market. Now, the index, their strategy is a buy and hold rather than a trade. Okay, they're not going to be trading on a daily basis. Most index funds follow the mantra of Warren Buffett, where it's like they're in a company or companies, or they're in the capital is invested for a long period of time. We're talking 5, 10, 15 years. That is their goal. They are long-term investors, a long-term index that does not respond to market volatility or things such as like recessions or anything like that. Of course, they'll adjust their strategy for, you know, large scale things, but for overall, they believe in a long-term investment and a steady, slow increase of your returns and your progress. The index funds are also cheaper to operate. Remember that I told you just a second ago that for a mutual fund, the fee is generally 1%. For an index, it's generally 0.02% annually. So for that same scenario that I gave, where you're like, if you have $10,000 invested, it'll be $100. For this, if you have $10,000 invested, it would be $2 for every $10,000 you have invested. So imagine if you had $100,000 invested in an index fund, you would pay $200. Now, and some people would be like, oh, that sounds great, because now that's cheaper than the mutual funds. One thing I always tell people about investing is that cheaper is not always better. And it depends, again, it all depends on your strategy, the type of returns that you're looking for. The cheapest outlet or vehicle is not always the best vehicle. So I want to get that thought press out of your head. Even in terms of individual stocks, that'll be a time where a stock that's trading at, let's say, $90 is actually cheaper than the stock that's trading at $25. And I know you're probably thinking, Jamal, how is that possible? $90 is way more than $25 based off the value, the return that the value that the company is returning to an investor. That $90 stock might have growth potential. They might be paying a dividend yield of 3.5%. They might have constantly increased that dividend over the years. Their financials might be better. They might have more cash than the company that's $25 a share. It's a lot of fundamentals that go into what would make a $90 stock cheaper than a $25 stock. Likewise, it's a lot of things that would go in that based off your strategy or the money you have invested that might make the mutual fund charging you 1% on $10,000 a lot cheaper than the index fund that's charging you 0.02% on $10,000. So you can't just look at the price and say, oh, cheaper is better. No, the equity and stock market is not like a sale at like a retailer. Cheaper isn't always better in that regard. We've already talked about that with an index fund, by definition, you own the stocks that make up the entire market. The entire market is what you're going for in the index fund. So this ensures that your return is the average return of the entire market. And what that means and what I'm saying by that is that the average of every, let's say you own the S&P Spider Fund. And that makes up the entirety of the S&P, every S&P listing that's on there. Your return for that annually will be the average of all of those companies combined and their average return of all of them. So 500 companies, the average return of all of those five will be the return you'll get on this index. And some people will be like, why would I just want the average? Some people like the average. Like over a 40-year span, I think from last I checked, I think it was 1975 to 2007, the S&P returned on average 11%. I might be a little bit high. I think it was somewhere between 10 and 11%. You can double check me and let me know if I'm a little wrong. But generally, I think I have those numbers in my head pretty good. So think about that. 11% return on $10,000 annually. That adds up. And that speaks to about compound interest. Because if you could get 11% return on average of $10,000, and I'm just doing some quick math for you guys, that's $1,100 a year times, let's call it, what, 40 years? So that's $44,000 that you've made just on the annual basis. And I haven't even thrown in the compound interest as well as some of these indexes and later on I get into ETFs. Some of them may pay dividends. So I'm not even really getting into the overall return of the return on your investment. And that's really with you not really doing anything. That's on average. Sometimes, like in a bull market like we've experienced before this pandemic kicked off, your returns might be higher than that. So, and that's just really putting away $10,000. And that was the average. Imagine if you put in more. Imagine if you put in the $50,000 or the $100,000, your return could be pretty decent, and that could really go into helping you supplement your income in retirement, or as you said, we talked on previous podcast, if you don't really need the investment, you can just live off your 401k and your Social Security. That could be a nice nest egg that you leave your children or your grandchildren to remember that you were here and for them to increase the generational wealth. Okay, and so index funds are one of the most preferred investment vehicles for people because one of the costs, of course, but because, you know, an average return is pretty good. People, a lot of people just want return on their money. And in an age where I told you a lot of people are just leaving their money in regular savings account and are really getting nothing. You're getting nothing to leave your money there. You're already getting zero. So if you went from zero to, you know, getting an average of, even if we made it a little more conservative, 8 or 9%, that's 900 times better than what you were getting before. So I know people always are looking for those big returns. They're looking for the Amazon returns. They're looking for, you know, the Tesla returns. And I have to remind people sometimes that Amazon just got to that, you know, 1,800, 2,000 range shares. For years, when it first launched, it was somewhere between, I believe when it first launched, it was like $60. And then it hovered around, you know, that $100, $200 range for years. It's just over the last 5 years or so, as they've expanded, using the capital to make acquisition, that they started bumping up to $600 a share, $800 a share. Then it hit the $1,000 mark. Now, you know, then it was the $1,200, now it's $1,500. It takes time. That's a slow, you have to have patience. Like, there are very few shares that are going to just go up, let's say, a 5,000% in an 18-month range. Those are speculation stocks, and they're probably highly volatile. Amazon's not really a volatile stock, so that type of return will take time. But if you do the work and make the right choices and are willing to let the money sit and continue to input more and more, you'll get those returns over time. The last thing we're going to talk about is the ETFs. And the ETFs, they're similar to mutual funds. So this one's, this section is going to be gone kind of short. It's not a long segment, because there's only a few differences between the mutual funds and the ETFs, and also the indexes. For one, there is no fee for the ETFs. This is the most interactive of all the funds, because the ETFs actually trade like individual stocks. Although they are a collection of diversified shares of industries or sectors or whatever fund you get, you one have to have a brokerage account. So, you know, your Robinhoods, your Webulls, your, you know, TD Ameritrades, your E-Trades, all of that. You have to have those to have an ETF, because the ETFs are listed directly on the exchange, whether it be the NASDAQ, whether it be the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow, or the S&P. So you have to have an online brokerage account. This is more of active investing than the other two, because you are the one that's actually going to pick the ETF. There is no fund manager. There is no fund organization that's going to pick these ETFs for you. Though someone has created the funds, they compiled the investments in there, so they've kind of done the work for you, but they do not do the day-to-day operations of it. You're going to decide whether you want, how long you want to hold it. You can trade it multiple times a day. It literally functions like an individual stock, like an Amazon, like a General Mills. You can buy and share buy and sell as many times as you want in a trading day. Okay. There's also, you're going to have to do, your homework on the securities that's in the ETF. Though someone's compiled it for you, you're going to have to do a little bit more due diligence to see, do you like the stocks that are in there? Does it work with your strategy? No ETF, no fund at all. It's going to have everything you want. What you're looking for is about, I would say, 75 to 80% compatibility for your overall investment strategy. I'm not going to say 100%, because it's just no way, because of the way that ETF funds ETFs, mutual funds, and index work, there's always going to be some, like I say, this is about diversification. So it's always going to be some things in there that may not necessarily go with your investment strategy, but as long as it's not overshadowing or overbearing what you're overall trying to achieve, I think you'll be okay. So about 75 to 80% of compatibility is probably what you're shooting for. So the ETFs also, they don't trade, they also trade in the after hours. I'm sorry. They trade in the after hours like individual shares. Mutual funds and indexes don't. So that's another key component that you need to look into when you're considering which strategy to pick and where you want to go with your investment. Okay. I think we've covered all of that for a for the episode. This episode's not as long as the other ones because this information was pretty straightforward. So one thing I will say with the ETFs, if you're going to get an online brokerage, because people have been asking me this a lot lately, Robinhood is good for beginners just for the streamlining of their platform. It's very user-friendly. If you've never bought stocks or any type of investments before, Robinhood is one of the simplest apps that you can use. You can download it on your phone. It's very user-friendly. A lot of people say that they really didn't take them long. I think they also have some tutorials on there. I'm also giving people cons too. Recently, in the last couple of weeks, they have had some outages, and I think that's just because I read an article that said they've had 3 million new millennial accounts over the last 90 days. So I would imagine that that's a lot of volume that their servers weren't expecting at all at one time. So they've experienced some outages where people have been trying to sell positions or make trades, and they couldn't execute it just because the system was down. But overall, the server is pretty good, or the service is pretty good. And when you enroll, they give you a free share, so you can't beat that. Also, a good one is Webull, and it's spelled exactly how I said it, Webull. That's also a good one. It's kind of like Robinhood, just a different offering. They also give you a free share when you enroll. Their platform seems to be user-friendly. I've been in both just playing around. I always like to play around in different apps or invest brokerage accounts, just so when people ask me, I'm not just talking to them blindly. I'll have a frame of reference. Webull actually also gives you the option to, as I haven't told you guys before, to play in paper money. It allows you to trade before you make the trade. So I think that's also really good. There's also, if you're more of an experienced investor or you're looking for information, the one thing that Robinhood or Webull is lacking is research analysis tools like your E-Trades, your TD Ameritrades. They'll have like graphs and long out history and things that are more complex if you're looking for more in-depth information. So you kind of need to use a combination of them both if you're going to look into investing, you're looking to researching a stock or a company that you're looking to invest. So you probably at least need one or two. I would say you need one of the newer brokerage accounts like a Webull or a Robinhood. And you also need at least one of the TD Ameritrade or Charles Schwab's for the more complex analysis and, you know, information that you're looking for. All right, guys, I think that covers this week's episode. Next week, we're going to have our first guest. I'm not sure what we're really going to talk about yet. Well, I do know what we're going to talk about, but I'm not going to give you the teaser yet. It's in reference to tech and being a woman in tech, a black woman in tech for sure, and her unique pathway to getting into that that career in that area. And we're going to also talk on some aspects of financial literacy and how, you know, increasing your income is another way to build financial wealth and getting your financial house in order. Because if you have more disposable income, or if you can raise your income making potential, it's a lot easier to make those financial goals and tangible dreams that you want to become a reality. But you also know that I always say that discipline has to come first. So I at least wanted to give you the knowledge and the foundational base before we started bringing people on, giving you various aspects and avenue of the way that they built their financial wealth or are building their financial wealth. So we're going to have them on next week. So that covers that. So it's been a great episode. Once again, I am your host, Jamal Vitos. You can follow me on Instagram at Leo Graham Prince, as well as Twitter at Leo Graham Prince. I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn at Jamal Vitos. That's spelled JamalVetose. Send me a DM, a message, if you want further details or further questions answered on future podcasts. But other than that, you guys have a great Sunday, and I'll see you next week.